Hi, this is Dennis Hoyle from Bellwether Games, and you're listening to The Family Gamers.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 42.
The meaning of life, the universe, and everything.
Of course it is. I am your host, Andrew.
And I am Anitra.
And I am super looking forward to this episode because...
Because you get to talk less.
You are telling a story.
Yeah. So this past weekend, I went to Granite Game Summit. And it was a blast.
Boom.
Not that kind of blast.
Oh.
It was a lot of fun. I played a lot of games. Some of which I have played before. Some of which were our games.
Mm-hmm.
Some of which I had heard of and not played. Some of which are so new that no one had ever played them before.
Those are the best. I like those the best because, you know, maybe you have a chance to affect the way the final game comes out. And that's just kind of like a little bit of pride. I like that.
Yeah. Games. So, yeah, I played a few games that were in development and in playtesting. And it was nice to do that and be able to give some feedback to a designer and say, this is a good game. You got a good idea here. Here are some like minor tweaks that might help.
Sure.
But it's already fun. So you're on the right track.
Right. So since the majority of our show is basically going to be you talking about Granite Game Summit and
yes.
the awesome time that you had, obviously, while we talk about what we've been doing for the last few weeks, it's probably not going to be on the list. Is that a correct assumption?
Reasonable.
All right. So so I guess I'll talk about what I've been doing,
yeah,
which will eventually overlap a little bit with what you've been doing. But
yeah.
So these last few weeks, we've been kind of cross-promoting the Grim Forest Kickstarter.
Yep.
From Druid City Games,
yep.
which we had James Hudson on the show. That Kickstarter is doing really, really well.
And it looks so awesome.
It looks so good. They've got a bunch of extra minis. They've destroyed a bunch of their stretch goals, which is awesome. So when you listen to this, you have only a day or two left. So if that is something that you're interested in, I would highly recommend just Google Kickstarter, The Grim Forest with two M's because it's Brothers Grimm.
G-R-I-M-M
yep.
Forest. Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because there is another project out there called The Grim Forest, which is not the same.
Yeah. I mean, if you Google that and add Druid City Games in there or whatever,
yeah.
or even if you just go through our old shows, you'll find
yep,
it.
Yep. There are links.
Yep. Also, today I finally pulled the trigger on kickstarting Stop Thief, which
mm-hmm.
is the... So Rob Davio, who is kind of the guy who does the whole legacy thing. So Pandemic Legacy,
okay.
Risk
yep.
Legacy, all that stuff. He did Seafall as well. He and his wife actually started a board game company. And what they're doing is they're finding like classic games. And they're sort of modernizing them.
Oh, interesting.
Right? And so they're doing a really cool modernization of Stop Thief. And that also, I think there's even less time on that. I want to say that I finally decided to pull the trigger on that because I saw a tweet that said like 36 hours remaining.
Ooh.
So if you want that, like check right now and
like
still might be
pause late. The podcast
yeah,
and go take a look.
Seriously. I think it's $37 including shipping for that.
Okay.
Not
too bad.
And that's going to be pretty neat. So I did those two things. And then while you were gone, I tried to be, you know, consistent with the Family Gamers thing. And I played some games with our kids.
Yep.
There were
a few games that I opted not to take with me in the hopes that you guys would get some more use out of them.
So we played Machikoro. We played old school Machikoro.
Oh.
So the original. I don't think Claire had ever played the new version, so she just didn't know how.
Yeah.
And so when I was in the middle of something, I was like, you go ahead and set it up. And
mm-hmm.
I can play
mm-hmm.
later. And she was like, I pulled all the stuff out because I didn't know how to play the new way. And I was like, it's so much easier to play it the new way. Now I have to shuffle all the stuff back in and all that. But it was fine.
Right.
So we played.
The traditional Machikoro way does have an advantage for players who've never played before and like children in that everything is out there on the board.
Yeah, I guess. But the problem with the original Machikoro, and if anybody's listening to this and they have the game, here's how you win. In the beginning of the game, you buy forests. And then you buy apple orchards. And then later on in the game, you buy mines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you win the game.
Yep, pretty much.
And that is the strategy to win the game. And so...
You're not the only strategy, but it's probably the best strategy.
It's the strategy. So the thing is that, you know, if you get the Harbor expansion, it mixes everything up. So you don't have a set number of things that you're going to be able to know that you're going to be able to buy.
Right. I think you only have like four different kinds of things out at a time. No, 10. Like
you
that.
Have 10.
You have 10?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. Yeah, but you never know what they are because you're just pulling them off the top of the deck.
Right, right, right.
So that's a better way to play it anyway. So even if you only have the base, right. I would just say play it that way.
We highly recommend playing that way.
It makes the game much better.
Unless you are in a group of people who are all playing for the first time.
Right. I mean, it does help because you can look stuff over, like while other people are taking their turns, you can kind of read all the cards and sort of develop a general strategy.
Yeah.
That's true. But the game is better if you play it with randomization.
Yes.
We also played Potion Explosion.
I specifically left that behind so you guys could play more of it because I thought long and hard about bringing it
with me. So I don't think we've talked about it on the show before since we've owned it.
I don't know if we have.
So when we had Spencer and Lara Williams, the Married with Board Games crew at marriedwithbg.com, when we had them on the show a few episodes ago, they highly recommended Potion Explosion. And for anybody who doesn't know what this is the game, it's a game from Cool Mania or Not. And basically what they did was they tried to take the that whole Match 3 Exploding Jewel kind of Candy Crush kind of thing that is online on Facebook, in apps and stuff like that, and turn it into a board game.
Yeah. We have talked about it some because on our last podcast, we had gotten the iOS version. Oh, we got the iOS app,
right. So ironically, so they take this Match 3 gameplay thing, they turn it into a board game, and they had so much fun with it that they turn around and then
turn it back into
an app. The app had been on sale, so we picked it up. We really kind of thought it was pretty cool, and yep. We figured, you know what? I mean, this is a game that seems like it's got some legs on it. So we did pick that up. And it's really fun.
It's
I think
really
the vibe
fun.
Is very slightly different when you're playing like with actual other people. it goes a little bit slower. There's less pressure to make your decisions quickly, I think. Because it's a little bit more social, but you also have to pay more attention to what's clinking into what.
Yeah. Because there's nothing there to manage that for you.
Right, so. Exactly. And I mean, we've kind of talked about the whole concept of fiddly bits before with the game like Seasons, which we played a lot online, and then we bought the meat-based version, and it was almost a little bit too fiddly. This is not that.
This is not fiddly. You just have to keep track of how the marbles fall in one column at a time.
Right. Right.
Which is not too much. You just have to be paying attention.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, so we did that, and we've been doing a lot of playing with Legos.
A lot of Legos.
All of a sudden, and like yesterday, for example, we watched the Lego movie while building with Legos, which was kind of a cool like meta thing, except I was supposed to be building with our middle child, and he was just like, the television is on. I am unable to move my extremities.
He is of that type where if there is TV, he cannot concentrate on anything else.
It's annoying.
Yeah, I mean, if he wasn't our, you know, relatively easy child, it could be more handy that I could park him in front of the TV and know that he wasn't going anywhere. My mom had the same issue with me when I was around his age. So, like, I get both ends of the frustration there that I've even seen it in him, like, he wants to be doing something else. But he cannot turn away from the TV if he is actually able to see it.
Mom, I can't do it. I can't do it, Mom.
It's just too distracting for him.
But then bringing it kind of even more present about an hour and a half ago, 2 hours ago maybe, we played... that was one. So last week we had a shipment of games from Blue Orange Games.
We got games from Blue Orange, and so far they're great.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so we got a bunch of stuff in for review. I talked about a lot of this stuff right after Toy Fair. That's where we initially made that connection. But we have King Domino, Dr. Eureka, Battlesheep. We have Clear for Takeoff. And we have Tumbletree.
Yes, and we played Tumbletree tonight.
Yep.
After dinner.
Tumbletree is a neat little game. So the whole game comes in an aluminum
cylindrical tin,
and the top kind of like mushrooms out a little bit, but it's got a flat top, so it's like basically the base of a tree. And all of the pieces are discs, but they're kind of
circular
ribbed,
cards with
right?
Yeah.
And so you deal them all out, all face down, and then you have a choice between taking one, two, or three cards off the top, and then you have to put them on the tree.
Yeah. It's basically a dexterity game using cards.
Right.
Right?
So the thing is that a bunch of the different cards have different animals on them, or like bees, or or other things, or they're just plain foliage. And each one of those things have slightly different effects.
Well, there's restrictions of like how you can put them on the tree.
Right.
Or where you can put them on the tree.
It really reminded me a lot of, do you remember the old, in the arcade, there were the, like, I think Chuck E. Cheese, I mean, at least in our region, that's where you saw this all the time, where you would, like, just start pumping your tokens into this machine. And
the coin pusher.
Yeah, games. Had, like, the sled, and it would push, and you're looking at these coins that are sitting, like, 4 inches off the edge, and if they would just
fall. Why won't they fall down?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Except and it's sort of the opposite in this, like, no, don't fall down. Exactly. Don't fall down.
But that's what it reminded me of. Like, that whole kind of thing with the weird balancing thing.
Sure.
The one thing I will say, like, it's rated for 6+, but, like, those cards are glossy and slick.
Yeah.
And, like, that is not an easy game. I was surprised at some of the, I don't know if maybe as it gets a little bit worn, maybe the sheen on the cards, you'll get more friction, but, like, if you pull the toucan, you're supposed to sit a foot away and toss the thing onto the tree. Like that's not
like,
happening.
Like Frisbee style? Yeah, we never, in our whole game, nobody ever managed to get it on the tree.
It's like, here, just take this ice cube, and I want you to throw it onto this other ice cube that's, like, 5 feet away, and it needs to not slide off.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. But other than that, like, I actually, so we've got 2 gaming sessions coming up this week. Because we've got so much stuff to look at. And I might pull this one out at both of them.
I think we should, just as an adult game.
And this is adults, right. Just because it's going to be hilarious. Like, it's going to be so funny.
Well, that's the thing I've found in general about dexterity games. Like, dexterity games, the minimum age level is fairly low. Because it's very clear what you need to do.
Right.
The problem is actually doing it.
Right.
So.
But, you know, I mean, it's like, I'm thinking, like, the thing with the half water bottle, the half full water bottle, and the kids and the flipping the thing on the table.
Oh, the flipping popular. The water bottle. Yeah.
Like, kids can do this kind of stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, if they get really, you know, they really want to do it, they'll do it. But our daughter, man, whew, she was getting really frustrated.
She was way too competitive about it.
Yeah. This is not a game for competitive people.
No. Whether they're kids or adults, this is because this is.
I mean, if you're adults and you're like if you're a kid and you're super competitive, like, it's life or death. Like, if you're adults and you're like,
even if you're an adult playing this game, because it's a dexterity game and it's with cards, you're going to be the type of person to be like, you bump the table. You have to take the cards. I don't care that it was my turn.
I guess if you can't control yourself kind of thing, but
you're
this game and drinking. No, no,
no, not so much.
But it was a lot of fun and, I do want to play it some more. So, yeah, that was Tumble Tree.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a review for that on the site.
Yes, we will. We will be in a month or so.
Because we have a bunch of blue-orange games, like, we're going to space them out. And put other stuff in between and stuff like that. But definitely keep an eye on the site. The review for that will come out, and we'll take some pictures. One thing I really did like about it was, because those cards are so thin, as the tree got a little bit bigger and then stuff got on top of it, so you could kind of shove things in between, because there's one of the
snake card
animals
you have to shove in between two cards.
Started to dip, and it almost created a little bit of like a canopy feel.
It looked more tree-like.
I was really surprised and kind of impressed by that.
Yeah.
So.
Also, at that point, I was like, no, put a card in the middle. Make it stop doing that.
Yeah, and our 2-year-old was, like, crawling around under the table. Was like, don't touch anything. It was pretty funny.
A little bit.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. Is there anything you want to add that is not Granite Game Summit?
That is not Granite Game Summit. Right. Well, I also played some Potion Explosion with our children.
Uh-huh.
And I had a lot of fun. And there's just something about the very physical nature of the game.
And hearing the clink and clack.
And the fact that it's sort of a heads down game where you don't really care too much about what everybody else is trying to do.
Right. One thing I do like about the game is how
it affects your own stuff. So it's not a super competitive game. It's one of those sort of solo side-by-side, parallel play.
One of the things I like about the game is that there is nothing hidden.
Yes.
So, like, you can talk, like, and you actually know this about me as a gamer. Like, I will, if I'm playing a game with someone and they're learning strategy, like, I'll coach them even if I'm playing against them, even if they're adults, just because I want people to have fun playing the game.
Yep.
And a game like this, like, you can totally do that because there's nothing hidden. So I could be like, well, Claire, I really want a black one, and the only good black ones to get are going to be those ones right there. So if you take them, I can't get them, and they're going to help you. Yeah. Or be like, yep. Oh, look, if you take these black ones out of the middle, the red ones will clink, and you'll get the red ones. And if you look just up there, you can tell there's a yellow one that's going to come down, and you'll get those too. So you can really show, and it's very visual.
Yes.
So it's a visual audio sensory game.
Yes.
That, I mean, it's a great tactile experience. Like, it's well made. I mean, and a lot of those things, I think, even though the strategy is probably a little, like, we demolished our kids. But unlike Tumbletree, where Claire was losing her mind because she wasn't winning, she didn't care with Potion Explosion at all because the game itself was so fun.
Right. It was fun simply to play the game. When I played it with our kids, basically, Claire, our oldest, her score was almost double our middle child's, and my score was almost double hers.
Right.
And we didn't care because we all had fun playing the game together.
Right.
So that was a nice game for that.
And one other thing, while I was playing, the kids were keeping closer track of things like, oh, you get one of the, what are they, skill tokens or whatever they are?
Okay.
The reward. Like, Asher was like, Dad, you get one because you got a third potion. I was like, oh, cool. Sure, oh, whatever. Hey,
sure,
awesome.
Thanks. That is a sign of someone who has played the app too much and not enough of the, the real life game.
But even still, like, the fact that he was so
that
involved,
they were invested.
That he was
invested
and paying that kind of attention was really cool and rewarding. And, I mean, all weekend they were like, Dad, can we play
again?
So. But.
It's a hit.
It's a testament to the game. I mean, it was a good call. Thanks, Spencer and Lara. Appreciate it.
What looks like it looks like a really gimmicky game, but it's not, and it's really fun.
Right.
So.
Yep.
That's the short version of what we think. After the long version.
All right, you got anything else, or should we cut to break?
I think that's about it, besides more Zelda. Always more Zelda.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and we will be right back. Yeah, we're back from our break, and you guys are going to have a very special treat because Anitra is going to talk all about Granite Game Summit 2017.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. We were like extra supporters.
Well, instead of simply buying a pass, a one-day pass or a three-day pass, I paid extra for the supporter pass badge thing, which gave me a goodie bag full of stuff, including
a shirt. That shirt
including
was great.
A very nice T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with the quality of the T-shirt.
Yeah, we've done supporter things for cons and stuff in the past, and the T-shirts have been okay. But like that shirt, you came home and I was like, "That's a nice shirt. It's subtle. It's not like in your face. I'm this big nerdy whatever thing."
So I wore it on the last day, and I had a little debate with myself on Sunday morning. I'm like, "Should I wear my second Family Gamers T-shirt or should I wear my Granite Game?" You know what? I think I like the Granite Game Summit T-shirt a little better than my short sleeve Family Gamers T-shirt. So, and everybody here has already seen me in the Family Gamers stuff, so we'll be okay.
Wow. All right. Well, so why don't we do this? Why don't you talk kind of about the experience in general, about the whole 3 days that you got to not have any children. I got the children.
2.5 days. What? With no children.
I'm sorry. Did you say 14 days?
2 days in one evening.
3 weeks? What?
It couldn't have been that bad.
All right. Anyway. So talk about the 3 days, kind of the overall experience and what kinds of cool things. So we did a map trade too. So talk about some of that stuff. And then I know you played a ton of stuff. So why don't we do like top three games per day?
Top two or three per day. I can do that.
Okay. Cool. Sure. So take it away.
All right. So the overall experience. So I came into this not knowing exactly what to expect. I knew it was about playing board games. Yeah, it's kind of in the name.
Yeah.
But other than that, I wasn't entirely sure. I've been to things like PAX before, and I expected it to be less than that in many ways.
Okay.
But what I was expecting, something that would still look kind of like a trade show. And it did.
Yeah, like a consumer-facing trade show, which is what PAX is. So, question. Size-wise, how did it compare to Boston Fig?
It was much smaller than Boston Fig.
Even smaller than Boston Fig?
Yes.
Boston Fig is pretty small.
Yes, no. Much smaller than Boston Fig.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how many people they had. They had enough that they were confident in booking dates already for next year. So
that's sweet. They
didn't lose money. So that's right. Good.
So when is it next year?
What a tease.
What a tease. Show notes. They said they booked it, but they didn't say when.
They didn't say when.
All right, I gave you an out. Fine.
They didn't say when, but they were confident enough that they decided they would continue doing the 3-day format.
Oh, good.
So this was the first time they did 3 days instead of one day. Okay. But my guess is it was probably only around 200 people or so as attendees the whole weekend.
Okay.
So any one day would have been less than
that. Let me ask you a hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Kids were there, right? Like there were kids around?
Yes, there were kids there mostly on Sunday.
Okay. That works very well for it. We're doing family planning on the show. Did you have to pay for kids also?
Kids
or?
Under 12 are free.
Okay, so
they plan to continue that, as far as I know.
So I'm going to posit something for 2018
live on podcast.
Yeah, where we're all going to go as a family, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay on Friday, and you're going to play on Saturday, and we'll all play on Sunday.
Something like that could definitely work.
All right. And we'll do day trips in New Hampshire. We'll visit my old family.
Yes.
Perfect.
Your old family as opposed to your new family?
Yeah, my old nuclear family as opposed to my new nuclear family.
All right.
Whatever. I don't know. We'll figure something out. It'll be a good time. You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Hey, family who listens to the show, you heard it here first.
Right. So kid-friendly show.
So... super kid friendly. Total. Like
good. It'll be more people next year, I think.
I'm sure it'll be more more people next year. But basically, the bulk of the show, the main attraction, as it were, was a large ballroom and a small ballroom filled with tables and board games. Like just plain old folding tables, some round, some rectangular, chairs everywhere, games circling the walls.
As well they should be. Okay, so interesting thing to mention. Yes. How do they get the games?
So, one end was the official Granite Game Summit library, which was several several temporary bookshelves filled to the brim with games. I think they said when they started the weekend, they had 200 games in the library. They certainly had more than that. I saw them putting new ones out while I was there. But then, all around the walls, they had tables set up with a large number on the wall above it, and then a bucket full of matching small numbers underneath. Anyone who was coming to Granite Game Summit was free to bring board games with them that they wanted to play or wanted to make available for other people to play, and put those on a table with a number. You could fill out a little sheet for your own purposes to say, these are the games I put down so I can check out later.
Sure.
Along with giving you an opportunity to leave a note to say, hey, I am leaving, you know, this day at around this time. So
I'm going to take my game. So you better not be playing it.
You better not be playing my game when it's time for me to go.
Right. So hold on. So were people like actively donating games to the Granite Game Summit library at the time or what?
I'm not sure. I just know that that on several occasions I saw the organizers sitting at the registration table putting new stickers on games to say that Granite Game Summit owns these games and then bringing them over to the library.
And
so
we should
they
mention,
must have been donated in some way.
We should also mention, kind of as a loop back, that a friend of the show is one of the people who helps organize Granite Game Summit.
Yes, Kevin Crane, creator of Robit Riddle. Is one of the organizers of
at @Baba_geek.
Yes.
On Twitter.
Yes. So. And I got a selfie with him on Saturday morning, which ended up on our Twitter feed. So that was fun. I also did play one or two quick games with his son, which was fun.
That's fun.
Yeah. But yeah, so tables all around the outside of the largest ballroom. With numbers, piles of games. It should be telling that there were about 20 numbers, you know, 20 tables. And when I put my games out Saturday morning, I ended up at table number 17.
That's a lot of games.
So people were, not only is it a lot of games, but people were committed. Most of those games were there by Friday night.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool.
And stayed there all weekend.
I mean, that's really like, when you talk about the gaming community.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So what else notable about the setup? They had each of the 3 days, they had a different setup, along the fourth wall of what they called play to win games. About a dozen games each day that cool. were raffled off at the end of the day. The way you got raffle tickets was by playing those games and then bringing them up to the registration desk and saying, "Hey, I played this game. Can I have a raffle ticket for it, please?"
Cool. I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like a game show. It's like a metagame. Ooh, this is fun.
It was really neat. It's a way to really encourage people to say, we think you should play some of these games that you probably haven't seen before.
Right.
And, you know, it's sort of the you know, very low risk, but high reward. You know, play a game, realize you don't even like it. All right, whatever. You know.
That's almost one of the things about, like, these kinds of events. Like, example, for some reason, I really want to play Kemet. I don't know why. Like, I don't have any really good reason for it. But it's like a $50 game. Like, I'm not going to buy a game right. that I've never played before just because for some reason I kind of want to play it and I don't really have any good bead on that. And, we happen to have a friend who owns a copy of Kemet. We just haven't gotten together with him. But, if you've got games like that, like, there's no – if yes. you don't have a board game cafe in your area, like, yes. you're up a creek. There's nothing you can do. And so yeah. – cons like this are a great way to do stuff.
They
like that.
Really are.
Especially when you're talking about 20 tables, like 6 foot, 8 foot
yeah.
folding tables stacked full high of games. With games. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I can say the play to win tied in somewhat with a concept they had for Saturday and Sunday, which they called Designer Alley.
Can I ask one more question, by the way, before you get into Designer Alley? So was there any indication, like, so we brought a bunch of games for people to play.
Yes.
Was there any indication other than just knowing that some of them had been played, like how many times each one
no.
was played? Because that would be cool.
That would be cool.
That would be super cool.
But that would require a lot more overhead.
I feel like it would be pretty, like.
Put a tick mark on the sheet or something.
For us. We should put like next year when we go, we'll put like a little sheet in that says, "Hey, we're the Family Gamers. Thanks for playing our game. Just sign your name here, like a
sure.
guest book or something."
Sure.
So we can see who played our game. Like something like that would be cool. So if they had just like a huge stack of them.
I mean, I don't know if anybody played our games when I wasn't actively offering them to people.
Sure.
But I know that I went and picked up games off other tables that I was like, I've always wanted to play this.
Right.
Let me try it out.
Right. I mean, because that, I think that that would be kind of just an interesting little. At PAX East, they have, now it's not crowdsourced, but they have a massive library of games. I don't know where they come from. But they actually released statistics on which games had been taken out the most.
Because
it's very much a library system in that regard. So, I mean, all that stuff is sent, all that information is centralized. So it's a little bit easier to do that stuff.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting after the fact to see which games got the most play.
Sure.
Because then you're like, oh, okay, well, these are the most popular games from... You know, from a really neutral source.
Yeah.
Right? Like, by the way...
And a large sample size.
A huge sample size. One of the top three was Sushi Go Party. So really, we should get that game out and actually play it.
We should actually play that game.
But, you know, so that's what got me thinking about it. Anyway, yeah. Designer Alley.
So tied in with Designer Alley. Designer Alley was on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m., there were about four tables, and they had set it up ahead of time. Game designers who had signed up ahead of time got a two-hour block specifically to, you know, and this was in a very obvious place in the room. So they got this two-hour block and a table to say, come, try my game. I am here to show you my game and, you know, answer any questions, explain it to you, and of these games, the ones that had actually been published, I believe every one of the games in Designer Alley that is a published game that is available to buy also ended up as a play to win.
Which is cool.
which is neat. However, there was also a lot of designers using this as a, this is a great way to get playtesters.
Of course, why not? I mean, I think with game design in general, getting playtesters is probably one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't iterate. Well, I mean, maybe you could a little bit during a show like this, but at least you could get volume.
Yes. I thought that was a really interesting use of it, actually, was a, you know, like, hey, I saw everything from a game that was still obviously in pretty early prototyping. I mean, we're talking cards that were basically made out of clip art stuck into card sleeves.
Okay.
But,
that's fine.
Yeah. But the concept totally worked. This is the game I was mentioning earlier, that the concept worked. It was fun to play. It still needs a little bit of tweaking, but it's already fun. And it was gratifying for the designer to see people playing it, having fun with it, and being able to make some suggestions of minor improvements.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that was cool. The downside of this is some of the designers in Designer Alley were guys who had more than one game to their name. But they were there, each one of those that I found was there, and they're like, I want to do this game. I am showing people this game. And I said, but what if I want to ask you about this other game?
Right.
That is not what this time is for. Okay, fine.
Right. Sure.
So I'm still working out some details with some of those guys because
we're going to get some interviews out of that too, probably.
We are going to get some interviews out of that.
So, okay, so that's Designer Alley. So
what else can I talk about? There were some special events.
Okay.
Which were pretty loosely organized. There was a podcast taping. There was a, there were a couple of larger group games that had been explicitly scheduled ahead of time.
Okay.
And that was really it. It was very, very loose. Okay. I was expecting more of a schedule.
Oh, okay.
Which wasn't there.
So there's the trade stuff, too. I wanted to talk about that stuff very briefly.
Yeah. So as part of this, sort of piggybacking onto the Granite Game Summit, there was a what we call a no-ship math trade operated through Board Game Geek. So a math trade is this weird sort of round robin arrangement where you put out and you say, I have all these games that I am willing to get rid of if I can find something compelling to me in return. And everybody puts out this list, and then everybody who's put things into the trade goes and says, oh, I'd be willing to trade this for that, or this for that, or this for that. And then a computer program goes through and figures out how to make the most matches out of all of that.
Right.
And spits back out a list of, like, okay, you know, Anitra, you give, you know, this game to player X, and these two games to player Y, and this game to player Z, and you get in return, you know, this game you wanted from player A, and this game you wanted from player B, and this game you wanted from player C. It's not a one-to-one trade. But the idea is everybody comes out of it happy.
Right. So here's my question about that. So, I mean, did they function almost like a pawn broker where you would just turn in your games and at the end you would check in and as everybody got turned in their stuff, you'd get the other stuff back? Or
there was a specific time arranged for the math trade.
So you had to actually meet the other people?
No.
Okay. Like, well, that's the part.
Almost.
Like, so, I mean, so, the idea behind this is, like, I think of, as a baseball guy, I'm like, okay, so, like, three-team trade. Like, so I'm trading these guys over here.
It's like that,
guy's trading stuff for that guy. And that. So I get that part of it.
So
the actual, like,
so the actual implementation was the guy who was running the math trade had a 8.5 by 11 size sheet of paper for each person saying, you know, Anitra should receive,
this,
you know,
game,
boom,
game,
boom, 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 boom.
Okay.
He had those set up kind of around around his area.
Okay. How many people?
It was about 20 people.
Not bad.
Yeah.
So everybody came to the table at the same time and he was just the broker in the middle?
Well, it was in about a 20-minute window.
Sure.
So he was only, it looked like most of the time he was only dealing with one or two people at a time and saying, hey, you know, come out here. You know, do you know where your games need to go? You know, yes, no. If you don't, then I'll help you figure out. And you would just go and set your game that you were giving away.
Oh, so you were setting your game in front of the other person's card.
In front of the other person's card.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Neat.
And then if, when you showed up, like I did, if your card was already full, that you had all the games that were yours, he'd be like, here you go. Take your games. Have fun.
Neat. I mean, my only concern with that is, like, what if somebody doesn't show up or something? Then, somebody gets kind of screwed.
Well, then, I mean, you gotta work through it one way or another.
I mean, yeah, that's fine, you know. So it's not like a thing where it's like, okay, there's, you know, there's 20 minutes to come and do all the drop-offs, and then once everything is done, then people can come pick up their games. They just kind of figure it out.
Like a lot of the other things that weekend, it was very loosely.
Yeah, I get handled. It. That's cool. I was just kind of curious about how that all worked out. And then there was like
piggybacking off of that. Somebody else decided to use BoardGameGeek to run an auction. So if you wanted to sell games and not have to ship them across the country, you could put a game up for auction.
Sure, why not?
So I bid on a game that I knew you would like. I won it by being the only person who bid.
Cheap. I like cheap.
And then I had to find a way to meet up with the guy who sold me the game.
Right.
Over the course of the 3 days. So... That was fun too. The math trade and the auction were sort of ancillary. They weren't officially being run by Granite Game Summit.
Okay, but they were kind of like.
But they were
blessed.
Allowed.
They were blessed.
They were allowed space to operate.
Right. Sure. Oh, okay. Interesting. Cool.
There was one vendor who was able to set up shop for a day.
Who was that?
A local New Hampshire game store. They were from Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
But I've forgotten.
We don't go to Portsmouth.
Sorry.
So that you did mention them to me. I remember that we said we could maybe stop. Okay. Well, tell me about the games. I want to hear some games.
Games. There were so many games, as I've already said.
Three per day.
Well, for Friday, that's easy because I got there Friday night. There was a loose event for fancy dress gaming. If you felt like it, you could come dressed up. I would say somewhere between a third and a half of the people Friday night were dressed up, which was kind of fun.
That's fun.
Kind of odd because the other half of the people were like jeans and t-shirts. And yeah, like, well. What are you guys doing over there? I met up with a friend on Friday night, and she and I, in our fancy, fancy clothes, played children's games, like Dr. Eureka.
I like it.
And we had fun. Don't remember a lot of what I played Friday night until my other friends left for the night, and I found some people who were just sitting down to a game of Letter Tycoon, and I said, I've played that game before, but it's been a while, and you folks look interesting to play with. So I did. It was probably the most interesting game of Letter Tycoon I've ever played.
Oh, there you go.
It was not cutthroat exactly, but intense competition.
So what you're saying is because every other game of Letter Tycoon you've played with me, I'm not an interesting Letter Tycoon player?
I wasn't playing it for being super competitive because I can't do that with word games because then I fail.
Okay.
So I was just playing it for fun, but the three of them were very competitive.
Sure.
And then we turned around and played Wizard, which I haven't played in like 6 or 7 years. And it was super long, which we all forgot that it always ends up super long, but it was also super fun.
Oh, that's good.
I'll call that my top games for Friday night.
Okay.
Saturday morning, I woke up and after a quick trip to Dunkin' Donuts, I got into gaming right away. Highlights of Saturday. I played a game called Dimension. It looks like a dexterity game, but it's actually not. It's a puzzle game.
This is Cosmos, right? They publish it?
Yes.
Yep.
So Dimension is a game where you have five different colored colors of balls, three of each color. Well, I can't call them marbles because they're about the size of a big old Aggie, but they're not marbles. They're plastic of some sort.
Okay.
And you have a little specialized board to hold all the balls, and you end up setting out these requirement cards in front of everybody, saying things like, you must have exactly two orange balls in your final structure, or blue cannot be on top of any other kind. It has to be on the bottom row.
Okay.
And basically what you're doing is you set out all these requirements. Everybody kind of looks at them. And then you flip a timer that lasts a minute. And in that minute, you try to build a pyramid of, I believe it ends up being 11 if you get the whole pyramid, 11 pieces, that meets as many of those requirements as you can. When the minute's up, everybody counts how many pieces they have. You get 1 point for each piece. And then you either add points or subtract points for each rule. Each rule you follow, you add 2 points. Each rule you missed or broke, you subtract 2 points. You play, I think, 6 rounds, and then the game is over.
Mm-hmm.
You get a bonus for using all 5 colors and following all the rules in any given round.
Yeah, right.
Which, on some rounds, is really hard, and on some rounds is... I found relatively easy. I admit part of the reason I liked this game is because I appear to have a natural affinity for it. It
Lovely.
Went really well for me.
Sure, I definitely should play this game. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, I liked it because it felt like it stretched my brain in a way that a lot of other board games don't. This sort of fast puzzle thing, but it's one where you're not immediately committed. I would start putting pieces down and then say, wait, no, that breaks that rule. Okay, but if I take this one out and put this one in, okay, now that rule, you know, does it still fit all the other ones? Yes, it does. Okay, I can keep going and see if I can add more pieces.
Sure.
So I really liked it.
Okay.
What else? I played Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
I love that game.
We lost both times.
I still love that game, even if you're dead.
But it was neat. It was a neat game. It felt a lot like Pandemic in some ways, in yeah. that like all of a sudden you see the end coming, and you're so, like, no, I have to stop it. It's not going to work.
So Flashpoint Fire Rescue is a cooperative game against the board. You are firefighters trying to save people. So it's like Pandemic in many, many ways.
Yeah. You're trying to save people and keep the building from collapsing.
Yep.
Because if too many people die, you lose. And if the building collapses on you, you lose.
Well, because people die.
I suppose, but it's... sure. I played a brand new little mini card game, time filler game that I told you about called In Vino Morte. Yeah, in wine there is death. This was a super simple game. Works best with a decently sized group, like 5, 6, up to 12 players. There are only 2 kinds of cards, wine cards and poison cards. The dealer takes some number of these and deals out 1 card to each player. There will be at least 1 poison out and at least 1 wine somewhere, you know, amongst all the players. So each player has a card. On their turn, they may choose, you know, do I want to swap cards with somebody else because I think I have the poison? Or do I want to just go ahead and drink right away because I think I have the wine? Each player from the dealer, you know, starting next to the dealer, goes around and does that. When we get back to the dealer does not get to make any choices. Everybody drinks at that point. So it's super simple. Gameplay is less than 5 minutes. But with a group of people who's having fun with it, it can get hilarious. And we threw around a lot of Princess Bride references.
Of course. That's kind of the
I clearly the cannot drink the cup in front of you, but maybe you're the type of man to put poison as far away from you as possible. So I clearly cannot drink the cup in front of me. That was a fun game to play. Not exactly a family game, but not a family game either.
Sure.
Depends on your family, I suppose.
Okay.
Most of the other games I could talk about from Saturday are games in development. So I will just leave that alone. Hopefully in the future, I will have some more interviews with game developers where we can talk more about specific games that are...
Okay.
On their way.
There is one game that wasn't technically in development anymore because it's going to be published this summer.
Yes.
I want you to talk about that game, because that game's really cool.
Yes. So I tried very hard to hunt down this developer, Chip Beauvais. He showed me some of his other games, and I said, but I saw this game that it says you have over here called Chroma Cubes. And he said, oh, well, you know, yeah, that's coming out this summer. There were some issues with previous Kickstarter.
Long story short.
And then he had to leave. But I found his friend who had a copy of this game, Chroma Cubes. Chroma Cubes is a competitive coloring game.
That's all you need to hear. I mean, really?
It's not a kid's game, although kids can play. It is definitely a strategy game with dice rolling and trying to get sufficient combinations to color the correct sections of your paper, or the right section, so you can get a section done first and get the most points, basically, in a nutshell. When I finally got a chance to play it, I was like, this is a neat game, and I am super interested in it, and hopefully I will have Chip Beauvais on the show in a month or two, and then we'll talk about it.
Mm.
Yeah. So, that one I spent most of Saturday trying to hunt down. Sunday, I finally, after 3 years, got a chance to play Moonquake Escape.
Moonquake Escape!
By a guy named Jeff Johnston. I'm not going to talk about it too much, because I was able to sit down with Jeff and get a full-length interview with him about his three games, Moonquake Escape, Flashlights and Fireflies, and Toasted or Roasted.
Right.
That is coming up next week.
Mm-hmm. That's for your listening for next pleasure.
But I was happy. I first saw Moonquake Escape at Boston Fig 2.5 years ago. Didn't get a chance to play
it then. And I saw Moonquake Escape at Toy Fair this year.
Yeah. Didn't get a chance to play it 2.5 years ago. Didn't get a chance to play it at Boston Fig the next year. And so I was like, wait, I have seen this game. I want to play this game. I will find a way to make it happen. And it was a fun game.
Cool.
What else? Sunday, I ended up showing World's Fair 1893 to a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Saturday afternoon, a bunch of my friends who were interested but hadn't had a chance to play it. Sunday morning, I got suddenly roped into it was on the Play to Win table. My friends, who I had showed it to yesterday, were playing it so they could see if they could win a copy.
Sure.
And there were some people kind of standing around being like, man, I want to play that game too, and maybe get a chance to win it. And my friend volunteered me and my copy to teach them how to play. I wouldn't have minded, except I was on my way to go get a cup of coffee. I didn't get my coffee until 11 o'clock. But other than that, it was a fun game, and I got my butt kicked. So they picked up on the strategy.
Well, it turns out there was some sympathetic suffering, because I foolishly chose to drink decaf coffee Sunday morning.
You fool.
So that was dumb.
And what else? And I played, from the Play to Win table, the game Imhotep.
Mm-hmm.
I
also from Cosmos, I think.
I believe so.
Yeah. Pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong. Whatever.
Yep, you're right. Woohoo! Cosmos.
Wicked Matt.
So what this tells me is we need to make a relationship with Cosmos so they'll start sending us games.
Yes, ma'am. I'll see what I can do.
Well, we'll see. Well, because the two games I came away from Granite Game Summit saying, I really want this game, I have to have this game, and I need to play it again and tell other people about it, were both published by Cosmos. So, you know, that says something.
Right.
Imhotep is a game set in ancient Egypt where you and...
With a name like Imhotep? I'm shocked.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was a futuristic ray gun game.
you the players are sort of working together but sort of competing to build pyramids, obelisks, a giant burial chamber, etc.
Stargate?
No. So you are... you're quarrying stone and then...
Warriors?
I did bring Quarriors. I did not play Quarriors the whole weekend, and that makes me a little sad, but not too sad.
Well, manage.
Back on topic. You are quarrying stone, you're loading it onto boats, and then you're taking those boats to different locations to do the different stuff. Go to the market. Sure, yes, to build the Stargate, exactly. If you successfully build the Stargate, you get 1,000,000 points and you win.
Perfect, this is my kind of game.
No, in all seriousness, you can go to the market, you can build a pyramid, you can build a wall, you can build a burial chamber, or you can build obelisks.
Can you march around the wall 3 times?
No.
No.
But the 4 different structures you can build all score in different ways, which is why it's important.
Sort of like monuments in Sulcan?
A little bit.
Or like the big buildings in Puerto Rico?
More like the big buildings in Puerto Rico, but not exactly. Because the pyramid scores immediately when you place stones.
Okay.
The wall scores at the end of a round.
Okay.
The burial chamber and the obelisks don't score until the very end of the game.
I see. Okay.
And each one of those, again, scores in a different way. The pyramid, you just, there's a different point value for each spot in the pyramid that you put a block. And you're forced, anywhere you go, you're forced into putting, you know, having your block put, your stone put in a specific location based on its order from the boat. You unload from the boat and they, you know, just, you.
Sure.
You shoot them right into place. Yeah. So, yeah, the pyramid has just got specific point values for each one. The wall at the end of a round is scored by how many of your color are visible when you look straight down at the wall. So it's in your best interest to cover up other people's stones.
Okay.
With your stones.
Sure.
The burial chamber is only one layer of stones, but can be built out on and on and on and on and on as long as you want. And in that one, at the end of the game, you get points for each stone in there, but more points if you have connected stones, like a like a design, like a mosaic design type thing.
Got it.
And the obelisks are a simple, you know, tallest one gets 15 points, second place gets 10, etc. In the game we played, obelisks ended up determining the winner.
Okay.
And we had ignored them for most of the game.
Don't.
So that was oh, look, those are way more powerful than we gave them credit. Oh, yeah, about that. So it's another one of those games where it's completely open. There is no hidden information at all.
Okay. So good for teaching kids.
Great for teaching kids. The strategy is relatively heavy, but not too heavy because it's somewhat unpredictable no matter how good you are at the game. Because some of it is other people are going to end up moving your stones around.
Okay.
And you can't predict how that's gonna work out.
But you really liked it.
I really liked it. Those are my highlights for the whole weekend.
Sweet. Well, it's a lot of highlights, so.
I'm trying not to make it last forever. Oh, one last very quick thing. The very last thing I played on Sunday was Anomia. I got to introduce Anomia to a bunch of people who had never played it before.
Awesome.
We were all laughing uproariously, and sometimes we had to just, like, somebody would hold up a hand and be like, don't go yet. Can't breathe. Don't pull a new card. Can't pay attention.
Good.
So
good.
That capped off the whole weekend. That was awesome. It was well worth it.
And Andrew Innes was there.
He was there, but I never got to meet him, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. So we'll have to figure this thing out somehow. I don't know.
Someday.
We'll do something.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, that's pretty much a whole show. So,
super short version. I played a ton of games. It was fun. You should go. You should bring your kids, at least if they're old enough to sit and play games.
Right. And what's the website?
The website is granitegamesummit.com.
All right. So check that out. Stay tuned to the site, and I'm sure that they will update it when they've got more information about when 2018.
Talk about the next one.
Dates are up.
Or fall 2017. I don't know.
Are they going to do a fall one?
I don't know. In the past, they said they did it twice a year, but I don't know if maybe going to the 3-day format, they're only going to do it once a year.
Oh. I don't know. Whatever.
So stay tuned. We don't know.
Keep an eye on the website because we don't know. All right. So that is our show. That is episode 42. I think we have indeed heard about the life, the universe, and everything.
It kind of felt like it. I'm sorry I went so long.
No, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. Anyway, you can always find us on Facebook at facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA, or you can find us on Twitter.
Yep. At FamilyGamersAA. Mm-hmm. You can reach us by email. I am Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com. You can find all of our stuff at thefamilygamers.com.
Funny how that works. Please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, even if you don't use iTunes as your podcast catcher of choice.
Right. If you've got it, please head in there and do a little Family Gamers podcast search.
Tell people you like us so that more people can listen to us. Please.
And we've got lots of great stuff coming to the website.
Yep.
We've got lots of games that are
in the review process right now, in the pipeline.
We've already got a bunch of great developer interviews scheduled. We've got another giveaway coming up pretty soon. We're going to be giving away a copy of Battle Goats, which I know we've talked about
on
the show. So lots of good stuff is happening. Don't forget to tell your friends about the show. And until next time, play games with your kids.